I believe this is our 12th session of the Effectual Bible Student. This is a new edition that we are video recording this week. The first edition was published in 2015. And we've come to the section on the use of Bible study tools. Fundamental Bible study tools. We mentioned the reference Bibles and then the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. We believe it's the most important single Bible study tool ever published. I was given a copy of this by the man that led me to Christ. We stopped in a bookstore in Alabama, and he bought me one of these. And so when I got saved, I had the Bibles, King James Bible, and I had this Strong's Concordance. And I'd grown up in a Baptist church, but I didn't know anything about the Bible, nothing. And so I just started looking up every word that I didn't know, and it was a lot of the words, and just would take the time to look it up. That's a big book. And I just about wore that out in that first year before I went off to Bible college. The editor was James Strong. He died in 1916, and he was a conservative Methodist Bible scholar, Hebrew, Greek, but he spent 35 years compiling that concordance, starting in 1855, and so it was first published in 1890. It's fairly new, and exhaustive concordance on the English Bible, the King James Bible, defines more than 8,000 Hebrew words and 5,000 Greek words, and it gave English-speaking people an ability to get definitions of the Hebrew and Greek words and see how they're used in other places without having a proficiency in Hebrew and Greek. It was a great tool. It's the first time such a thing ever existed. And that project, in fact, all these major Bible study tools were finished during a time of great revival in America. Great revival, and the Bible Conference movement, the Bible Institute movement, that's when dispensational theology was brought back. It had been lost for a long time, and the fundamentalist movement and the separation of conservatives from liberal denominations and huge evangelistic campaigns, and great revival was going on, and evangelists like D.L. Moody and R.A. Torrey, Gypsy Smith and J. Wilbur Chapman and Sam Jones, Billy Sunday, Mordecai Hammond, and many, many others. And J. Frank Norris and William Bell Riley, Baptist leaders. William Bell Riley was up north, J. Frank Norris down in the south. A great world missionary movement at that time. It was birthed in the midst of spiritual revival. And there was just an explosion of missionary ascending, and there was an explosion of university students giving themselves to Christ and going to China and to Africa and places that were very, very hard to live in those days, places where you didn't have a very long life expectancy, and you knew that probably a lot of your children were going to die, and they went there, and there was like the Cambridge Seven, C.T. Studd, and prominent men. C.T. Studd was a prominent man. His father had made a fortune in India and came back to Britain to retire and to enjoy himself the rest of his life. And he had this huge, huge estate and a huge mansion and servants. And he had his own horse stables and racetracks. And his sons went to Oxford and they were Cambridge. They went to Cambridge and they were sports stars and cricket stars, and national stars. Everybody knew their names. C.T. Studd was and his brothers. But their dad got saved at a Moody campaign, and he was changed. One of his servants said, "I don't know what happened to him. He's the same man outside, but he's a different man." You know, that's salvation. There's a different man in that skin, he says. And so he sold his horses. He stopped gambling. And he was a rich man, the man of the manor. And he started getting in his buggy and going around to his neighbors and telling them about Christ. his whole life was changed. And so his boys thought, oh boy, this is not good. Because they weren't interested in that. But they got saved pretty soon after that. And C.T. Studd. And C.T. Studd gave his life to go to China. And his dad died. And he gave away his inheritance. And wanted to go just live by faith. And he had his little wife. Prisca was her name. I believe it was Prisca was her nickname. And she had been in the Salvation Army. And so he gave away most of his fortune, huge fortune. And he kept back part of it for his bride. Because he said the Bible says that if you don't take care of your own, you're worse than an infidel. And so he gave her that. And she said, no, I'm going to give it all away. Let's give it all away. And she said, the Bank of Heaven's more dependable than the Bank of England. Yes, indeed it is. And they did. And you know what happened to them? They starved. Do you believe that? It's impossible that that could happen. It's impossible that you step out by faith and really trust God, really do some serious trusting in God, and that you'll go without. It's impossible. No, God took care of them. Their faith was tested at times, but God took perfect care of them, and God greatly used him. And that's the kind of thing that was happening. Revival. And these great study tools. God raised up these great study tools. James Strong. And so he worked on the English Revised Version Translation Committee, which was wrong. And I'm sorry that he did. And some King James Bible defenders refused to use Strong's because of his association like that. But there's nothing that can take its place. I've used the thing for 48 years intensely. And I don't agree with everything in there. But mostly what I've found is right and accurate. And I can check Strong's out, as we're going to show you, but with the Bible itself. And you have to understand, Bible student has to understand the issue of the modern versions and the modern textual criticism on the Greek side and the Hebrew side. You've got to understand the basics of that, or you can be easily misled by any Bible study tool today, almost, except mine and a few others. And you need to understand that. We've given that kind of education in the book, Why We Hold to the King James Bible, which is readily available. And that's the kind of reading we need to do. We need to be readers. You waste a lot of time. If you're an ordinary person, you waste a lot of time that could be more profitably spent. And it can be profitably spent in this way, getting a good Bible education and all those various things that are necessary associated with the Bible. So it's important to test the Bible's dictionary, the dictionary definitions with the Bible itself. For example, the word mystery, which we've already considered, I believe, a little bit in this course. Mystery. Romans 16:25, for example. Mystery. We're talking about Bible words. I love the study of Bible words. Jesus said that man doth not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. Well, here they are. These are God's words. These are living words, quick and powerful words. I love to study these words. And the word mystery in Romans 16:25. Now, to him that is of power to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery. The mystery. And so what is that? And it's transliterated from the Greek. The Greek is mysterion. And so that English is just a transliteration of the Greek word. And now if you would turn to Strong's here and look up mystery, you go to the first part of Strong's is a dictionary, and the first part of Strong's is a concordance, and that's how you find words, as I was showing one of the gentlemen this week. And then the last part of Strong's is a dictionary of the Hebrew and Greek, but you don't have to know Hebrew and Greek because they're given numbers. And if you were to look up mystery here in the concordance, mystery, and you go down to Romans. So if you look up the word mystery, it's going to give you all the words in the King James Bible that have the word mystery in it. Here it is. In fact, it's the last word under the M's. And it has all the words, all the verses that have that word, beginning with Mark 4:11 and going through Revelation 17:7 here, mystery. And so you would go down to Romans, and you would see that it is Romans 16:25. And over in the margin here, Strong's gives you a little number over here. It's 3455, I think. Is that it? No, 3466, which is the key to the dictionary. And this takes some work. And it pays great dividends. If you're lazy, you're not going to get anything out of this course. If you're willing to work, you will. And that's all there is to it. There is no other option. You say, what's the other option? There aren't any. That's your choice. Work or don't get anything much out of the Bible. And that's the whole of life. That's the way God made life. He did not make man to be lazy and laze around. We won't even be lazing around in heaven, strumming harps on a cloud. That's a myth. And so, there it is. And so, 3466, you would go back here to the Greek. It's italicized. 3466 is italicized, which tells us it's in the Greek dictionary. If it's not italicized, it's in the Hebrew dictionary. So we go back there to 3466. I'm showing you how to use this thing as we do this example. 3466. And we find mysterion. And so there is a Strong's information about that word. It means to shut the mouth. It's from a Greek word meaning muo, to shut the mouth. A secret or mystery. Through the idea of silence imposed by initiation into religious rites. Well, that's not accurate. That's not what the Bible means. That was a common Greek meaning at the time in Greek society. The secret cults, the mystery cults, they were mysterious, and you had to be initiated into them in secret ways. That is exactly the opposite of what mystery means in the New Testament. So, Mr. Strong, you're wrong. Well, how do we know? Well, look here. Romans 16, verse 25, according to the revelation, a revelation of the mystery which was kept secret since the world began, but now is made manifest and by the scriptures of the prophets. So here God tells us what a mystery is in Scripture. Something hidden in the Old Testament time, it's right here, and now revealed in the New Testament, especially by the Apostle Paul's revelations. So it's not secret, mysterious. Strong was wrong. So I can check him out by paying attention to the Bible. But usually he's right. And usually it's very helpful. And so that's the way you can check, by paying close attention to the Bible itself, you can check these things. But if you just are not thinking much and you just blindly want, you know, let me look it up in the dictionary, okay, then you're going to be easily misled. And one of my objectives is that God's people will be personally grounded in the Scriptures so you will not be misled. So you can handle the Bible properly by yourself to some extent. Now, certain men have gifts, spiritual gifts, that are beyond the normal. I have that. I've had that since I was saved. I knew that I had a special gift of teaching. But any believer, as we saw at the beginning of this course, is to be a teacher. And so that means you can, if you're willing to do what you need to do, you can understand the Bible to a certain extent to yourself so that you can help others and help protect your family. You can. And that's our objective. We can't force anybody to do it. But I know how to teach people that are willing to be taught. And this is it. And so this is very important, being able to pay attention and check these things. And we gave another example here. The word beareth in 1 Corinthians 13:17. Love, charity, beareth all things. And that's the Greek word stego. If we were to look it all up, we would find that's the Greek word stego, which according to Strong's means to cover over in silence, to conceal, to hide the faults of others. And then Strong's gives a secondary meaning, to hold out, forbear, bear with, endure. Well, as a matter of fact, that word, stego, that word, beareth, in the King James Bible, is never used in any other way except endure, to bear. And so he didn't need to give that first definition because it's never used in the Bible. And so we always go back to the Bible and see how the words are used in the various contexts. And we can check any resource that way. And we need to. We need to be very careful. We live in an hour of apostasy. The Christian world is full of false teaching, full of it. Even people that claim to be strong Bible believers, evangelicals, many of them are just full of liberalism and all kinds of false ideas. And then you got Pentecostalism and all the isms out there. So we need to be very careful in using any resource. But if nothing else, Strong provided an immeasurable benefit for Bible students by producing a numbering system for every Hebrew and Greek word. And that allows me, if I don't know any Hebrew and Greek, if someone doesn't know any Hebrew and Greek, to at least be able to see definitions of those words and then see how they're used in various places. And that is invaluable. And it didn't exist. Such a tool did not exist before Strong came along. 35 years of labor that he put into this for us. And so being able to see the Greek and Hebrew, invaluable. For example, in John chapter 21. John chapter 21, Jesus is talking to Peter, restoring Peter. John chapter 21, on the Sea of Galilee, they're having breakfast out there. They had fished all night, not caught anything, and then Jesus appeared on the shore and gave them a big, huge net full of fish. And Peter drug it in by himself. That shows he's a big, powerful man. And Jesus cooked breakfast for them. And then Jesus talked to Peter. And he three times asked him, Peter, do you love me? Three times. Peter got a little upset at that. On the third occasion, it looks like. Jesus said, verse 12, come and dine. I bet that was tasty fish. And so gave him fish and bread. And verse 15, when they dined, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He said unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my lambs. He saith to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, feed my sheep. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus said unto him, feed my sheep. And so he repeated that. But he used different Greek words here, and you can't see that in the English itself. The word love is used each time to translate those two Greek words. But if you look in the Strong's Concordance, you can see that it is two different Greek words for love there. And one is agape love, God's giving love, sacrificial love. And then phileo love, which is more like a friendship love. And Jesus used the word agape twice. He said, Peter, do you love me with agape love, with God's love? And Peter answered, I phileo you. I am friendly toward you. I have friendly love toward you. It's lesser. It's lesser, a little lesser. And Peter knew what he was saying, and Jesus repeated that. But you can't see that unless you can touch the Hebrew and Greek a little bit. And there's great advantages to it. I'm thankful for Mr. Strong for doing that. And so this concordance has two sections. The concordance itself, as we've said, which is the first part, every word in the King James Bible, A to Z, and then the Hebrew and Greek dictionaries in the back. And so in the concordance, the Bible words are listed alphabetically in bold, all capitalized letters, and then the words are followed by a list of verses in which that word appears every time it appears in a verse. And you can get, and it gives you a little bit of the content, a little bit of the verse, a little part of the verse, so you can see what verse it's talking about. And the Bible student can see how many different Greek or Hebrew words have been translated into that particular English word. Many times a different Hebrew word will be used for a Greek word and vice versa. And as the same English word will be translated from different Greek words. And you can see that right here in this concordance. And by looking up the number in the Hebrew or Greek dictionary, the Bible student can find the English spelling and pronunciation of that Hebrew or Greek word, the etymology or history of the word, etymology, history, and a definition of the word, and then other English translations of that word in the King James Bible. I find that very helpful. And so, how do you use the concordance? Most of you know this, but some of you don't, as some I've talked to this week didn't. You use Strong's to find verses. That's the first use of a concordance. And you think of a verse. What's a verse? I better find it. You guys are asleep. All right. And so you think of a verse, and but you don't remember where it is exactly. Happens all the time, right? Does to me. And more and more as I get older. But I want to find that verse. And so a concordance, that's the first purpose of a concordance. And for example, here's a verse about tempestuous wind. As that wind came up and they started, and Paul started on his little shipwreck expedition in Acts 27:14. But not long after, there arose against it a tempestuous wind. A tempestuous wind. And so you're thinking, where's that verse about that in tempestuous wind? And if you can think of a word in that verse, the most unique word as possible, then you can find that verse very easily. And so you think, okay, it's got the word tempestuous, or it's got the word essential, or it's got the word some word in it. And so you simply look it up. And then you go down the list of verses until you find it. That's the first use of a concordant. Extremely helpful. And but you've got to find the most unique word you can think of in that verse. For example, delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Where is that verse? And you think, well, I don't know. And so if you tried to look up thyself, you're going to find 201 verses with the word thyself. And so that's not much help. And if you tried to find heart, you say, well, it's got the word heart in it. I'll look that. But there's 823 verses with heart in it. So that's not very helpful. And then I think, well, there's the word delight in that verse. Delight thyself. Okay, I'll look up delight. And so then you start narrowing it down, and there's only 58 verses with delight. So that's the most unique word in there. You try to remember the most unique word you can. And look it up, and you can find it very easily. So you use Strong's to find verses, and you use Strong's to study the meaning of words. Those are the two major things. And those are the ways I wore out a Strong's concordance and got myself literally a serious Bible education in 1 year. And I've never stopped that. But word study. Word study is the most basic form of all forms of Bible study. To study the words, to find the meaning. You don't understand a verse until you understand every word in that verse. That's basic. And if you're reading through the Bible and you're not taking the time to look up the verse, the words you don't know, you're almost wasting your time. Because you're not understanding. You can't understand a verse if you don't understand the words. How could you do that? That would be mysterious. But it's not mysterious. This is basic grammar and words and definitions and dictionaries. That's the first thing about Bible study. And so you look, you find a word. Your word mystery or the word desire, whatever. And then you find a number that Strong's gives. And you go back to the dictionary and you can start finding the definition of that word. That's the Strong's way. And so that's the main two ways that we use the Strong's Concordance. Finding the meaning. We break that down in the textbook point by point and give examples of hope, looking up the word hope and finding meaning of hope. And then simple, the word simple. A lot of words have changed meaning since 1611. And you think you know the meaning, but really you don't. Because of the change in meaning. Berai. Berai. Proverbs 29:24. What's berai mean? I wonder if we took a test, why we would do on that. If you don't understand the words, you don't understand the Bible. Wasting your time. Berai. We give a study of that from Strong's Concordance. And then take no thought. Take no thought. That was a puzzle to me when I first started reading the Bible for myself. Take no thought. You mean I'm not to think about this thing at all? I'm not to just to have no thought at all about these things like money? No, it doesn't exactly mean that. It's talking about care. And if you study the word in the various contexts, you can see real easy, really quickly, it's talking about worry and care. Yeah, I'm supposed to think about my job and my family and lots of things. But I'm not to take thought in the sense of worrying and being worn down by care, casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. But yeah, I'm to think and plan. So understanding these words properly is essential. And you can use Strong's to study doctrine, and we've given examples of that. But the main two uses are finding words and finding the definition of words. And you can use Strong's to study people and places, and we've given some examples of that. And so the major use of the Strong's Concordance. And young people can get this and can do some really serious Bible study with it. We're going to stop there tonight, stop a little short, but and then start tomorrow night, the Lord willing, looking at the treasure of Scripture knowledge, a couple of these other Bible study tools, and then some fundamentals as far as starting out your Bible study career and some examples of Bible studies you can do. But we're going to stop here tonight.